Hello and welcome to For Fact's Sake, a monthly podcast by the Center for Information Integrity in Africa, or CINIA for short. I'm Dabadi Motla. The explosion of misinformation and harmful content on big tech's digital platforms threatens democracy and social cohesion. Most recently, here in South Africa, a reluctant Meta, which owns Facebook, WhatsApp, and Instagram, was ordered by the High Court to shut down Instagram accounts and WhatsApp channels posting explicit sexual content of school children. In this episode, we are discussing platform security with a person who was directly and successfully involved in taking on the all-powerful big tech, including threatening to have a senior Meta manager locked up. It's a We live in an age where a single private moment, a photo or a video shared in trust, can be stolen, uploaded, and turned into a tool to shame, humiliate, bully, and destroy someone's reputation in an instant. Social media platforms like WhatsApp, Instagram, Twitter, now called X, and Facebook were created to connect people across communities and continents, but have now morphed into something that is often much more menacing. Today, anonymous accounts on these platforms are being used to spread child sexual abuse material on an alarming scale. In the South African case, the WhatsApp channel included images of a grade 12 boy having sex with a grade 9 girl in a school bathroom and way more. Teenagers have had their most traumatic experiences exposed online, their names and their schools identified. These digital attacks have devastating consequences, with some of the teenagers reportedly committing suicide. This is a horrifying reality. But at the center of this crisis is the failure of big tech. Companies like Meta have little moderation regarding the content being shared on their platforms. For example, a WhatsApp channel has no visible names, no numbers, or identifying information, making it nearly impossible to track who is behind the content. In this episode, we sit down with Emma Setlia, a social media law expert and the founder of the digital law company. Over a week in July, she battled Meta in court, threatening jail time for a senior employee unless the company handed over critical information and shut down channels spreading child pornography. That action led to a landmark court order. We recorded the interview on Tuesday, the 22nd of July, just days after the ruling in the Gauteng High Court in Johannesburg. Emma, can you tell us what led you into the field of digital media law?
So I worked for a long time at a big law firm called Weber Wenzel, and I was lucky enough to be in the media law department. And our clients were journalists. Our clients were people who were paid to write articles for the front page of the newspaper. And part of that was to teach journalists about the kinds of limits there are to the right to freedom of expression. So what does defamation mean? When are you infringing somebody's privacy? What are the concerns we need to think about and know about before we are let loose on the front page of the newspaper? And then I went and I studied in London for a little bit. I did a master's in media law, information technology and media communications. And I came back and it was just kind of as everything was shifting from traditional media to social media. I had a year, it was almost like a gap year, but it was very academically indulgent because I was able to get on top of this new field. I was able to get on top of social media. It was just as everything, as I say, was moving to social media, but it was during the time of the tweeting of the Julian Assange trial, WikiLeaks. There was this huge boom, and it's been a fabulous career. I've had the digital law company now for 12 years, and we do a lot of educational work. So we do a lot of speaking at schools and companies, really about how not to mess up online. Because I think, as we've learned time and time again, that prevention is better than cure. When things go wrong in the social media world, in the online space, it can have very long-lasting consequences.
You tried to shut down social media accounts that were distributing child pornography. How did it first come to your attention? Was there a specific moment that got you involved?
So because we do a lot of educational work, the children know that they are able to contact us at any time. If they are ever the victims of any kind of online harm, we have an open door policy. We help children. We don't charge children, because what we found is that the law can be a very effective weapon in the fight against online harms. And so it's not unusual that we get up to 50 direct messages a day from children saying they're being extorted, sextorted, blackmailed, that there's a horrible sticker or meme that's been created of them, or somebody's coercing them into sending private sexual content, or defamation, or there's bullying, or there's harassment. And then we help as far as we can. And what happened in this case was that it was about Friday lunchtime, and I started receiving direct messages on my Instagram accounts, the Digital Law Company Instagram account, from children alerting me to the fact that there were these shade room accounts that had been created, anonymous accounts on Instagram and on WhatsApp, not WhatsApp groups, they were WhatsApp channels, and kids starting to send screenshots of the kind of content. So I immediately kicked into gear. We used all the normal technical reporting mechanisms. They weren't successful. I caught hold of all of my contacts at Meta, begged and pleaded for help, and they were able to delete some of the content, but wherever we were deleting, they were popping up elsewhere. So an Instagram account would be deleted, they would just create a new one. A WhatsApp channel would be deleted, they would just create a new one. So we landed up bringing an urgent application on Monday night. After hours, we were heard by the very, very urgent court. From consulting with counsel for the first time to appearing in court was less than about 5 hours, because these channels were sending an enormous amount of a child sexual abuse material, CSAM. Unfortunately, our law in South Africa still refers to child pornography, but there was a lot of content, which was mostly solicited by people, members of the public, anonymous Instagram accounts, basically saying, send us your leaks, send us any nudes that anyone sent you, sent any videos you may have, and we'll publish them. So they were primarily using a link NGL, not going to lie, but these kids, and sometimes Google Docs, and they were sending this content, which would then be distributed on these WhatsApp channels. The WhatsApp channels were getting up to 20,000 followers within a matter of hours. And the extent of the publication was enormous. We were seeing sort of 1,000 messages in a matter of a couple of hours. So a lot of it was leaks. So child sexual abuse material, videos, photographs. And a lot of it was highly defamatory, degrading content, naming children. So it wasn't just this person, you know, a name. It was this person's name, surname, in this class, in this grade, at this school. This is her social media handle. And then saying things about that child, that their body count is bigger than their age, that they were sexually abused by their parent, that they had an STI, that they had abortions. Some of it all of it actually complete nonsense, but horrifically disseminated and terrible consequences. I mean, we were being alerted to the fact that suicides were taking place late on Monday. We were aware of two kids who'd completed suicide and one who was in a coma after having been named and kind of leaked on one of these shade rooms. So we realized how important it was and how urgent it was that we got this content shut down. And after the first court order, Meta did make some steps in deleting some of the content, but what they didn't do was ban the user or hand over any identifying information. So late on Wednesday night, we brought an urgent application for contempt of court, and we sought to send one of Meta's key employees in Johannesburg to prison for a period of 30 days unless they complied with the court order. As soon as we brought that contempt application, which was late on Wednesday, then Meta really did start jumping around. And then we worked through the night on Thursday night to reach an order, which was made an order of court by consent on Friday morning, which required various things of Meta, that they handed over identifying information by midday Monday, which they did. And they created a hotline just for me, which is fabulous, to alert them to any content or new accounts that may pop up and may cause similar kind of harm.
Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about Meta in a few minutes, but I wanted to know about your reaction when you first saw the explicit material of the school children. What was your reaction, especially as a mother and as a lawyer?
So the thing is that I deal with a lot of extreme content. It takes a lot to floor me, and this did, because of a few elements. The first was how there was just absolutely no remorse, that these kids, even when they were alerted to the fact that suicides had been taking place, I was on one group, one shade room group, it was actually an Instagram group chat, and some kids had taken screenshots of rest in peace tributes to girls who were deceased. I mean, to be honest, these were reports given to me. I haven't spoken to these people's families, so I can't confirm. But certainly the reports were that there were these suicides. And these kids sharing on this one Instagram group, rest in peace to this person. And then somebody replying on the group, who was clearly quite a young teenage boy, saying, oh, I saw her video. And then another young teenage boy saying, send it. And then these two girls' videos, which had been leaked on the shade rooms earlier in the week, and who had apparently, according to these reports, completed suicide, their videos were then shared even after the fact that these kids were posting rest in peace. So it was just, there was zero remorse. A lot of the content was that sort of manosphere incel culture of, we've done nothing wrong. These girls are sluts. These girls should be named. They're the ones who did something wrong by taking these pictures, by taking the videos. That we're fixing the country. There was a lot of that kind of, we're fixing the country by making sure that these girls get the consequence they deserve because they took pictures, which is just, I mean, unconscionable. So that was one thing that really affected me. Another was the nature of the videos, you know, the kinds of, you know, we can call them sex tapes colloquially, but private sexual videos is what we would call them from a legal point of view. And the fact that they feature children under the age of 18 would mean that they constitute child sexual abuse material. The nature of the content was not about mutual satisfaction in any way. It was really girls being very violently treated in these sexual acts. And that made me very scared for a generation. You know, we've known about the risks of children growing up with pornography as their sex education for a long time. But to see it so starkly and in real time, because I was literally on these groups while these leaks were dropping in the middle of the night, when I say I had like 5 hours sleep accumulatively in the week, it's no exaggeration. And so it was harrowing to see that kind of behavior. You know, we saw coming out of the United Kingdom last year a statistic which said that for the first time in history, over 50% of the sex crimes committed against children were committed by other children. You know, historically, it's been adults committing sex crimes against children, but now it's children against children. And that was really apparent in the kind of content I was seeing. So that was very, very affecting. And I suppose the other thing was just how these kids are online all day and all night. I mean, a lot of those kids would have been writing exams. The four-term schools certainly were writing exams last week. They should be sleeping. But these kids were, they would create a WhatsApp channel at 11 p.m. and by 3 a.m. they had 20,000 followers. It was on a scale I haven't seen before.
Who do you believe should be responsible for monitoring and enforcing the removal of such content, and how should this be implemented?
So I think the primary responsibility, obviously, is the user. We've got to teach children about individual responsibility. You know, before we let children drive cars, we make them do a learner's license where they learn the rules of the road and then test that they're capable of driving a car. What I'm seeing here is that children get phones so young, and there are significant legal consequences that can follow. You know, from a criminal point of view, children have criminal capacity from 12 years old. They can be arrested and charged with crimen injuria, child pornography offences, non-consensual distribution of intimate images, threats, incitement, etc. From a civil point of view, children can be sued from 7 years old, defamation, protection orders under the Harassment Act, that kind of thing. So that's really been my life's work, is teaching children in talks, in webinars. I've written a number of books. The most recent one just came out, How Not to Mess Up Online, A Teenager's Guide. And so that's the primary responsibility. But I think that what Meta has created with WhatsApp channels is indefensible. They have created a platform for mass dissemination. There is very little to no reaction when you report channels. And the channels are not encrypted. Just to give you an idea, so on a WhatsApp group, it's limited to 1,024 people, which sounds already like a nightmare to me, but at least it's limited to 1,024 people. And there's identifying information on that group. You can see who created it. You can see the phone number of the creator. You can see the phone numbers of the other participants. When it comes to the WhatsApp channels, there's zero identifying information. You have no idea who created the channel, who else is on the channel. You can see three things. You can see the name of the channel. You can see the timestamp and date stamp of when the channel was created. And you can see how many followers there are. That is it. And these channels are being used to share completely illegal content. And you report it to WhatsApp, WhatsApp LLC. Most of these social media platforms, when you report, there's a breakdown. Well, what are you reporting for? Is it child sexual abuse material or human trafficking, which should be dealt with very quickly? Are you reporting for hate speech? Are you reporting for defamation? Is someone bullying you? You know, those kinds of allows you to fast track the more serious reports. There's none of that. With a WhatsApp channel, you can just press report. I've reported channels 5 days ago now. I'm still waiting for any kind of response. There's child pornography being shared on the channel. There's no way it cannot violate the guidelines, the rules on WhatsApp, but nothing is done unless you make a song and a dance and rush off to court. It's really ridiculous. The worst part is that what they had to admit to us in the course of the litigation last week was that they had to tell us that where somebody creates a WhatsApp channel, doesn't matter how big that WhatsApp channel gets or how much content is circulated on that channel, if it is deleted by the channel owner, all of the content that was sent on that channel remains accessible to everybody who was a follower of that channel forever.
Do you believe that Meta is taking accountability with what is happening on their platforms?
No. I mean, this is a problem that every country in the world just about is having. We've had this ongoing fight with big tech about who's actually taking responsibility. My view is if you create the platform, you must make it a safe platform, especially for the most vulnerable members of our society, particularly children and particularly girl children. And they are absolutely impossible to hold to account. When we first brought the court order on Monday, all we got was some letter from Bowman's saying, oh, you've cited the wrong entity. You've cited Facebook South Africa, which we hadn't. You must sue Meta in California, but with no address, no contact details, no assistance, even in the face of the extreme nature of the content that we'd explained to them about. What they've done historically is build an impenetrable fortress around themselves and take no accountability. It was only when we threatened to arrest a Meta employee that they sat up and listened. And for us to have to do that, and I really didn't want to do that because actually this person was the only person who's ever helped me at Meta. There's one other person who's helped me over the years. He was the first person who actually responded to messages and to emails saying, we're escalating this and we're trying to get these accounts shut down. So I felt very bad that we had to take that step. But if we hadn't taken that step, they wouldn't have complied. They would have just ignored us and taken the approach that we're not responsible in South Africa because we don't have jurisdiction in South Africa. If you want to sue us in America.
Meta has scaled back its moderation effort. They got rid of fact checkers claiming they were too politically biased. At the same time, Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg acknowledged that more harmful content will appear on the platforms as a result of the content moderation changes. Is what you encountered an example of that?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, moderation has never been, even when they had a bigger moderation teams, it's never been a reliable mechanism to get content removed. On WhatsApp channels, it really seems this zero moderation. I don't know what's technically possible, but I can tell you that if the kids were sharing kind of sexually explicit content on Instagram, then Instagram's technology would have been able to block that quite quickly. You know, the pornography, etc. They've got mechanisms. I mean, if we think about what FaceTime announced last week, which is that if you're on a FaceTime call and they detect that somebody has taken off their clothing, the call will automatically cut. You know, we've got AI. We've got very, very sophisticated technological mechanisms. How they can't be scanning content sent on WhatsApp channels to confirm that there isn't pornography being sent on WhatsApp, I can't believe. I'm not a tech person, but that's certainly what they've told us.
When we asked Tawo Makenete, who is the head of public policy Southern Africa at Meta, for an interview, he declined. He wrote to us in a short message that, unfortunately, his request to do the podcast was not approved by Meta's communications division. Do you think that Meta has something to hide?
Yes, of course they do. They have provided a platform which is not fit for purpose in the form of the WhatsApp channels. WhatsApp is an age restriction of 13. If you're going to create a platform for mass dissemination of illegal content and not take any steps unless somebody spends fortunes going to court and getting court orders against personal employees of Meta, of course they've got something to hide. What they're doing is unconscionable, that they are creating these platforms, as I say, for mass dissemination, that people are able to send the kind of content and there's zero identifying information. You know, for me, the root of all evil online is anonymity. And what they've created is a mechanism for mass dissemination of illegal content with no identifying information.
Coming back to South Africa, do you believe that the South African judiciary is tech-savvy enough to handle complex technology-related cases?
I appreciate that these can be complicated, but thankfully, the judges, when they are asked to hear this kind of stuff, they have the benefit of counsel guiding them about how the platforms work. So, of course, it's an issue. The Media Monitoring Agency, in conjunction with Power and Associates Attorneys, released a few months ago a judicial handbook on social media matters, which is really just a sort of a summary of all the platforms and how they work. And that's hopefully going to be a reference work for judges. But my worry is not with the judges. My worry is with the police. You go to the police and you lay a criminal charge, as over 30 people inboxed me to say they're done. And all of them were turned away. We tried it. So we found out about these on Friday. On Saturday morning, my associate Rourke went to the Rosebank police station and tried to lay a criminal charge. And they said, unless you know who's behind it, you can't open a case. It's exactly what they said to all the 30 kids who contacted me as well at various police stations around the country. Unless you can tell us who's behind it, we can't help you. We're not going to open a case, which is mad. Because if you think, like, you go and lay a criminal charge of murder at the police station and then the policeman says to you, well, who did it? And then you say to them, well, that's your whole damn job. Right, you find out who did it. That's your job. So there is, in theory, a law enforcement hotline between South African police services or law enforcement in every country and these big tech platforms. So Meta, which is WhatsApp, Instagram, Facebook, Alphabet, which is YouTube, Gmail and Google, and ByteDance, which is TikTok. And X, I suppose. So there's supposed to be a law enforcement mechanism. So you go to the police, you lay a criminal charge, they open up a case, and then they use that hotline, I'm going to call it, to the company to get identifying information or to get the content shut down. The problem in South Africa is, firstly, the police have no idea. We know we've got cyber crimes in theory, but in practice, they're very, very hard to use because the police are just ill-equipped to deal with them.
What does that tell us about the law? Do we have some sort of law here in South Africa that can protect us in terms of the social media that we use?
So we have all of the laws. We have common law, so we have rights to privacy, rights to dignity. We have rules around defamation. We have rules around intellectual property, which does become relevant sometimes with image-based violence cases or celebrity image cases. We have the Cyber Crimes Act, which has all sorts of criminal offences in it relating to the online world. We have the Films and Publications Amendment Act. We have the common law offence of crimen injuria, serious infringement of dignity. We have the Films and Publications Amendment Act, which has a specific non-consensual distribution of private sexual images offence in it. We have the laws. The law is not the problem. It's access to the laws and implementation of the laws. And unless we can find out who's behind content, then the law is not worth the paper it's written on, because we can't do anything if we don't know who's behind it. And the keeper of the keys in this instance, but particularly when it comes to WhatsApp channels, is Meta, because there's zero identifying information. So the only people who have the identifying information is the company itself. And so they should hand it over in instances where there are victims of serious online harms.
That is Emma Setlia, a social media law expert. We approached Thabo Makenete, who is the head of public policy Southern Africa at Meta, for an interview. This was his response. I had a discussion with our comms division about this, and unfortunately, my request to do the podcast was not approved. That's all we have for you this month. You can explore more of Sinia's work at the website, CINIA.Africa. That is CINIA.Africa. There, you can subscribe to our weekly newsletter. Also, please follow Sinia on Instagram for regular updates. I'm Tibadi Modla. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next month.